Good morning, everyone. I'm Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank all of you for allowing me to be here this weekend and share my experience, strength, and hope. And and I'm not saying this because he's sitting next to me, but it is truly an honor for me to be sitting with my sponsor and my teacher and to share a little bit of our experiences with this book and our God. So this is really a treat for me, and I thank all of you for what you've done thus far, and what I'm sure you'll continue to do is give us the permission to speak. Give us the permission to speak from our experiences and embrace what we have to say. When I get to do things like this, what I tend to watch is some of the reactions to the information that's being put out. And what I offer you is to be aware of any resistance you may experience. It's the ego's way of protecting itself and getting another breath, because it don't want to die. And sometimes you'll get some information from maybe Mark or myself or another speaker, or maybe it happened last night, and the resistance is manifested in, I need to get another cup of coffee or have another smoke, or I really don't like these New Yorkers coming in to tell us how to do it, or however it may be. But it'll get you out of here, and it'll allow you to shut down and not be open to what is being shared. And so I ask you, if that starts to happen, just recognize it. It's the illness in neon light showing up. And just be aware. Just be here this weekend. Just be with the information. And learn to get, if you will, unhook from what the ego is demanding that you do. The more God I get to experience, the less self is allowed to live. And the ego wants no part of that. Self doesn't want to die, and what this work will do will allow self to die and to experience God. Just want to kick this off with something, a book that I've worked with. It reads, "To breathe and to know you're alive is wonderful. Because you are alive, everything is possible. Practice, continue. Don't waste a single moment. Every moment is an opportunity to breathe. Every moment is an opportunity to experience God. Through your daily life, walk in mindfulness, making peaceful, happy steps on our planet. Breathe deeply and enjoy your breathing. Be aware. Enjoy being alive." My big book says that most good ideas are simple, and that reading was as simple as you can possibly get. And when I first started out on this journey, I thought, like, if I was to wake up and experience God, it was going to become incredibly complicated and incredibly deep. And it was only for people who lived in a cave or went up on a mountain or joined a monastery that can really grasp and comprehend this power called God. And I found it to be just the opposite, that God doesn't make too hard terms. So it's very simply today with some of my 11-step practice, for example, it's really about paying attention to breath. I've gotten to study lots of books, and everyone that I've worked with talks about the importance of breath. And I go into silence to hear, and darkness to see, and to experience presence with this power called God, being mindful of every moment. And at times I get to practice hearing the silence between the words someone speaks and not worried about the answer I'm going to give them in the middle of them speaking. And it takes me back to presence. I shared last night about paying attention and being integrated with silence, even with the noise that's going on. The silence that underlies everything. I used to think when I would go to meditate, when I first started working with this practice, that when I would sit down to meditate, that I, because I'm an AA, was going to create this space called silence. And I would get in there and try to create silence. And what I was simply doing was creating struggle and trying to be still. I was fighting and wrestling with myself, and no one was around. I was having a tremendous fight. No one was around, and trying to get still and worship this power. and give attention to this power. And then it came to me very simply, very clearly one day, having to do with silence, how can I create that which already exists? The silence is always present. And at that moment, my practice became that much more of an invitation to me because it's waiting for me all the time. And can I take that, presence, can I take that silence into all I do, into my homes, occupations, and affairs? But we have a 10th step that allows us to do this spot check during the day. It talks about growing and understanding and effectiveness, that we've entered the world of the spirit. And to truly enter the world of the spirit and to experience this power called God, am I free of my past? Have I made peace with my past? Because if I'm still troubled by the voices of yesterday, how can I be present today? Because one way or the other, those old belief systems, those old practices, those old voices will determine who I be and how I go out from here and how I interact with you. And trust me, that was a hard lesson for me to learn. There was a lot of struggling that went on and trying to little by slowly get away from that. And what I found out is what this work really does. We talk about, you know, gotta find God. I have to find God, searching for God, and he ain't lost. And all I need to do is go in order to go out and clear away the things that are blocking me from this power called God. Last night I talked about the subtraction rather than addition. It's about the removal. And as someone had taught me not too long ago, what this work does, getting to experience the sunlight of the Spirit, getting to experience God, getting to be free of self, freedom from the bondage of self, very simply, the destination is really about returning home. Because I have to believe a loving and infinite, merciful God didn't put me here spiritually blocked, spiritually sick. But somehow, somewhere, over the years, I've accumulated things. I've accumulated belief systems. I've accumulated prejudice and contempt and resentment and fear. And little by slowly, it has, if you could see this happening, kind of moved away from this power, in a sense. What my work does, what my big book does, is take a sledgehammer to all of that and removes it. That's why for some of us this work is painful and uncomfortable, because we are experiencing the death of self. And going through the archway, there's a squeezing that goes on. But it goes from being a concept to where we can talk about it from a place of experience. And in that waking up, we become integrated with this power, and those belief systems and those prejudices and the contempt and the fear and the resentments little by slowly start to dissolve, and we, in a sense, return home. God ain't lost. In step 10, throughout my book, there are words that never tell me, hey, Pete, you've done enough work. You can kind of kick back and relax. In fact, you know what? Why don't you? You're different. You can rest on your laurels. My big book uses words like next, commenced, now, vigorous, at once, turn. My sponsor has shown me to work with words like turn, watch, aware, observe. And in that, I get to disidentify or not get hooked into what my thinking mind is telling me. You're looking at someone whose thinking mind wants truly for me to be not a part of this, but to be wrapped up in drama, to be wrapped up in self, to be consumed by fear, and then eventually drunk. My mind is always looking for drama. I'll create drama if there's no drama. If I can't create drama, do you have drama? I'll take your drama. Just something to give me a sense of self. And I write inventory. And I share. Step 10 talks about continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. Promptly admit the wrong I've harmed, make amends quickly, and move on, see where I can be of help to other people. And I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous with writing, doing lots of writing. And then I start to worship the writing. I started to worship the methodology rather than the power that's keeping me sober all along. And then my sponsor says, you're killing too many trees. Stop writing. But I learned a great lesson out of that that was shared with me. And my sponsor sat with me and says, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. That's what our big book says. And I was writing inventory all the time. He says, but a business which is always writing inventory will go broke too, because they're never open for business. And I heard him. And I didn't realize how subtle it was. There was a shift that went from worshiping God to worshiping the methodology. So I do the spot check inventory. And I'll just talk about mechanics for a little bit. There's questions in 10, there's questions in 11. And I don't have, you know, I'm not consumed with writing. But if I have fear going on with me at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to wait for a nightly review and go through the whole day consumed with a piece of fear to decide to write inventory. I'll write inventory at the first opportunity. If I have a resentment that's got me, I'm not going to wait till tonight to write the inventory. If I have an opportunity during the day, I'll share it with someone and put it into column inventory. It allows me to get free. I've seen lots of AAs claim to be in the world of the Spirit with their lips, and yet, when we speak to them, they're wrapped up in need to write more inventory, need to go through the work again. I have more drama. I have more things. I just found out are not right with me. I need to do this. And they're always searching for some sort of defect, some sort of drama. And I'm wondering, if you're truly in the world of the Spirit, ought we not be free and spread the spiritual wings and go fly and go work with others? What does it feel like? What does it look like to be in the world of the Spirit? What's that look like? Can we talk about that from a place of experience? We don't hear too many topic meetings like that back home because not enough people are really in the world of the Spirit. We'll give it some lip service, but to come at it from a place of experience, the room gets awfully quiet in a hurry. Some of my 11th step, I'll do a nightly review. I'll make some prayer. I'll just do my meditation. And on awakening, Mark talked a little bit about this, and we read it earlier. You know, there's a part to my 11th step that sets up the day as to what I'm going to do, where I'm going to go. But there's another part to this 11th step as to how I be, how am I going to be through all those affairs? Taking the kids to school, taking the kids to Little League practice, you know, making dinner, preparing things, doing my chores, my doing. But how do I be in those affairs? Do I understand that I get to do those things and I walk with the power of God in all those things? Even the job interview, which I'm not too thrilled about going to, or getting to go to a doctor, which I'm not too thrilled about going to, that I go with the power of God and I get to do that stuff, rather than I gotta do this, I have to do this. It's been made abundantly clear to me that the alternative is drunk under a bridge somewhere. But I get to worship this power, I get to go into silence, I get to go into meditation, I get to pray, and I get to take that wherever I go. Walking with that, a book talks about spiritual life and spiritual death. It becomes spiritual life not only for me, but others who come into my world, the people I touch through the power of God. And spiritual death for me when I don't, and possibly spiritual death for people who never get an opportunity to work with me, who God had assigned for me. What we get to experience is way beyond our AA meeting. What I've gotten to experience is way beyond the big book. My big book don't keep me sober. My meetings don't keep me sober. But all these things point me to the power which does keep me sober. And I get to do things like this and work with another alcoholic. My 10 and 11 practice has revealed many things to me. And I've shared this many times with Mark. And he's given me some guidance on this. One of the things I found was this, how often of my perceptions of what's going on cause me pain and suffering rather than the reality of actually what's happening. You know why? Because my mind has now gotten in the way. And what this book does, what a lot of the books I work with do, is they are aimed, they go at spirit rather than the thinking mind. They're aimed at spirit in order for me to wake up. And I get to see an inventory. When I want to know how angry I was, I experience some love and joy. When I want to know how greedy I've been, I get to experience giving away what I have. When I want to see how depressed I was, I experience God, and I see God in other people. And when I want to see how attached I was to all the noise in my head and out there, I get to experience some silence. And I see the difference, the dichotomy in how my mind wants me to live and how God is moving me.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I get to use the vital sixth sense as discussed in the 10th step because how do you condense a 24-year experience with steps 10, 11, and 15 minutes? I will do my best. How do you get from a gurney at a detox unit the morning of October 19th, 1982, dead, to London, England, sitting here with all of you in fellowship? Well, I can assure you, you don't do it on your power. It seems like my experience with steps 10 and 11 has two distinct periods of time. One is my first 10 years sober, and the second is from that point on, the last 14. Steps 10 and 11 are new language, completely new language that is not designed to be comprehended nor utilized nor experienced with your mind. It is to be practiced with an awakened spirit. The mind that put me on the gurney almost dead is not the organ I'm going to go into to get well. The book addresses the issue of I stay sober based on fit spiritual condition. That implies that I awaken to something called a spiritual condition. What I know about that based on my experience is without doing the work in 1 through 9, that is impossible. I have experience early on in AA reading the words on 10 and 11, not being able to practice any of them. Because I was completely blocked to an awakened spirit, which is the organ that I use to work with 10 and 11. The way that I first experienced fit spiritual condition is I worked the first 9 steps, which are a launching pad into the spiritual dimension of 10 and 11. Looking at the craving of the body, the obsession of the mind experientially to arrive at the conclusion that I have no mental defense. That I commit the most insane act of my life, stone cold sober. At certain times, and I don't know what the time looks like. And do I need power? And looking at the unmanageability of my life, my internal condition, my spirituality, my untreated alcoholism, which was going on long before drink and alcohol treated. 1/3 of the first 164 pages devoted to that first step experience. Why? Because who in their right mind is going to do 2 through 12 unless you need power? Spiritual living is not easy. If it was, there'd be 10,000 people here. We get to decide. You go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of water. How much of this you want? I get to take responsibility. How much do I want? First step experience. Come to believe in a power. Why? Because I need power. I was brought to the second step somewhere between an atheist and agnostic, but I'm not a fool. I have never struggled with the God issue. Here's why. Because I needed power. The only people I see that ever struggle with the God issue are the ones who somehow must think they have power. I had none. Therefore, it was never a struggle. I just needed a bunch of it. Second step, come up with a concept that would work for me. Interesting idea I was introduced. I will find the inner resource deep down within. Wow, that's a new idea, isn't it? Come up against my third step. Am I convinced my life ran on my will? Cannot and will not work. Yes. Every time through the work, I look at that. Do I meet that requirement? It's a requirement to meet before I make my decision. Third step decision about this relationship with this power. A power I cannot comprehend, I can only experience. What is the relationship? Father and child, employer, employee, director, actor. That relationship, look those words up, know what they mean. Keystone, make a decision to do what? Experience power. That's all it is. Third step is nothing more than that. I made that decision. I said that incredible prayer, which in hindsight, I had no idea what I was saying. I had no idea what I was unleashing into the universe. I had no idea that the universe would respond to those words. Think about them. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me, and you do with me as you will. On my own power, I would not be up here this morning. I assure you. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I can better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, so that victory will bear witness. See, that's all I've ever done since I came to the rooms, is bear witness of God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. And I will not back down off that. Power, the program is about power. It is about the power of God to manifest through you, to touch the lives of your families, your communities, other alcoholics. It's an amazing thing. And now I'm going to face and be rid of that which has me blocked from power that I need. I'm going to write the three inventories: resentment, fear, sex. All the manifestations of self when I'm living a life based on self-will, separated from everybody and everything. By then, the book has introduced me to my problem, and it's not alcohol. It does a real weird thing, but it waits till I'm quite a ways into it. It tells me it's but a symptom, that your trouble is you're selfish and you're self-centered. But then it says, but my self-will cannot defeat my self-will, so I'm in this horrible dilemma. That's why I write inventory. I stay clear on why I write inventory. Face and be rid of that which has me blocked from a power I need. So I write the inventories and I do a fifth step. In the fifth step, I begin to disconnect from ego. Book says I begin to have this spiritual experience. That's important if, in fact, in the tenth step, I'm staying sober only today because I'm in fit spiritual condition. Somewhere in there, something has to happen. I have to start awaken to this spirit, this divinity that dwells within and without. Step 6 and 7 is where I start to connect with God. Why? Because a lot of things that it was blocking me got removed in that process of 4, 5, 6, and 7. And I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. I'm walking hand in hand. All those incredible fifth step promises. I make my list and I begin to make amends. And if you don't make amends, my experience is you will not experience your oneness with your fellow human brothers and sisters. See, there's nothing between me and any of you. I've had periods of time in AA where there's a wall, massive wall between me and you. That is not the case as I sit here today. There is nothing. You and I are one. You can only add to my life. You cannot take nothing from me. And I begin to make these amends, and now I get catapulted into the spiritual dimension of the 10th and 11th step. It is though a door, if you will, has been opened. I have entered the world of the Spirit, and you know it. See, I quit trying to find God a long time ago. If God is closer than breath, how it is impossible to find God. I begin to pursue a series of actions to wake up to that which is closer than breath, to experience God, not to find and not to seek. Some of you know the futility of seeking. Run around here at 97 books and 42 teachers and 96 sponsors. And one day you just chuck it. You wake up. Oh, no. The 10th and 11th step to me are very distinct steps in terms of how I use them. This morning, the 11th step is what I do in the morning before I walk out of my house, and it is what I do in the evening when I do a written evening review or a review, and I do prayer and meditation. The 10th step for me describes a set of tools that I work with the minute my hand hits the door and it's on. See, when I'm at home and I wake up and I got my cat Hobo and Bill. By the way, Bill's worked all the steps. He's at perfect peace and ease. Hobo refuses to write inventory. So you can imagine the two of them every morning. It's very, very interesting and amusing. I told Hobo when he gets enough pain, he'll write inventory. But see, I'm in fit spiritual condition in that setting, and all is well. And the minute I hit the door, the voice starts. Traffic. Phone's going to start ringing. I don't know how I did what I did yesterday, but the world wants me to do it tomorrow. Right? See, Jill said something very important. Very easy to be spiritually fit at a monastery or in the sanctuary of your home. Try it at Starbucks when you're waiting in a long line. Stuck in traffic. Someone hollering at you. See, and then all through the day, the 10th step. There's four paragraphs in the 10th step in the big book. I look at them today and they are like an abyss to me. A lifetime of practices. Line of the will. The 10th step for me is line of the will. I walk out that door and I am aligned. And all the 10th step practices that I get to work with all day long are designed to keep me in alignment. Grow in understanding and effectiveness. Watch, ask, turn, cease. Powerful practices. I'm driving. I get afraid. I'm off line of the will. Remove this fear. Remind me what you'd have me be. Boom. I'm back. It's a practice. Doesn't happen automatically. Practice. Practice. The way I practice is I write words on 3x5 cards and I put them in my car and I put them in my mirror and I put them at my desk. And I'll work with them 3-6 months at a time. One word, watch. For what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. See, I came to steps 10 and 11 asleep, dreaming I'm awake. I think because my eyes are open, I'm awake. I'm on autopilot. Got tired of living with the consequences of being on autopilot. Wake up. Wake up, Mark. Watch yourself. Ask. What a great spiritual practice. Ask. You can't ask if you're consumed with selfishness, self-centeredness, because pride blocks. Heaven forbid I ask for directions, right? Turn. Turn what? Turn the force away from you. Turn to someone you can help. Doesn't have to be an Elkie. Anywhere. That ego's moving in. It's easy. The ego shows its face. How? Fear, anxiety, stress. Take your pick. It moves in on you. See it. Turn. Smile. Move the force away from you. See? Cease fighting anything or anyone. Without having done the work, particularly in 4 through 9, there's absolutely no way I can practice that. Because in order to practice cease fighting anything or anyone, you have to be free of judgment. You have to be in complete acceptance with no resistance to the isness of whatever is taking place. Without having done the work in 4 through 9, that is impossible. Because parts of me have an agenda. And I have arrangements that I need met in order to be okay. It goes on and it talks about I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These thoughts must go with me constantly. And he uses this verbiage. I can exercise my willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Think of what the book is telling you at this point in time. The same will that you had to turn over in the second and the third step, you now get to practice because it is the proper use of the will. And so I work with that all day long. See, here's how I look at the 10th step. If you find yourself in the middle of the street and there's an 18-wheeler semi barreling down on you, that is not the time to analyze how you got there. Do that in your evening review. Get out of the street. That's really what the 10th step does all day long. All day long. Someone comes in, they talk, I get short with them. I'm off, line of the will, come back, clean it up, I'm aligned again, all day long, practice, practice. Vital sixth sense. What does that mean? It means a vital sixth sense, a sense of intuition. Mark, do this, call this person, do this. I've been in sales and marketing for years, you know how I do that? I pray and meditate in the morning, and I ask to be guided with the vital sixth sense about what to do and who to call on that day. And it works. Now, you don't want to tell your employer that's how you're doing your marketing agenda, because they'll think you're a little wacko. But you see, that's what the 10th step is. Incredible practices with so much depth and so much weight to them. And if I work with them another 30 years, I will barely touch what they can give me, what they can do. Position of neutrality, I discovered, is about far more than just alcohol. I can be moved to a position of neutrality in many, many areas of my life. I can be at a middle-of-the-road meeting, or I can be at a big book thumper meeting, and I'm in a position of neutrality. Because for me, if anything speaks of separation, it is not of God. It is of ego. Hence the position of neutrality. It's neither good nor it's bad. It just is. The isness. See, I created so much of my own suffering through my selfishness and self-centeredness because it would drive me to judge. Judge always leads to separation, does it not? It would drive me to resist that which is. That is the will of God. And I want to resist that. And then I wonder why I suffer. And my attachments. Oh. Much suffering through my attachments. My attachments today is the present moment Peter has talked about. The only reality of my life. Right here, right now. And when I come back later this afternoon, I will be in a new moment, I will be in a new breath, and I have never been there before. And that is incredibly exciting. I spent a lot of my life, including my sober years, doing Groundhog Day, which meant repeating it over and over, thinking, well, I'm going into the same workplace. And I had another whole awakening and realized, Mark, you only experience one breath at a time. You've never been there before. Remember one time hearing Chuck Chamberlain, who was married to this woman forever, saying, every morning when I wake up, there's a new woman there. And I thought to myself, he must have done a lot of LSD. I know exactly what he meant, because in that moment, every morning, sitting there looking at her, he had never been there with her before. Do you see how exciting your life is if you could live that? The word boredom would never enter your lips or your mind again. 10th and 11th step. What incredible stuff. 11th step for me. I have an area in my home that I discovered over time. I burn incense, I burn sage. It's where I do my meditation. It takes on its own level of energy. I began a daily meditation life in 1991, and the reason was, between my 9th and 10th year of sobriety, my mind drove me insane and into a nut house. I just throw that out for your consideration, for those of you that are avoiding meditation. It is not in the big book. And I realized I needed to lose my identification with my mind. And it was through the process of meditation I did that. I got a timer and I begin to sit 2 times a day. So I've had a daily meditation life now for almost 15 years. And I did lose my identification with my mind. And that was a major, major turning point in my the way I experienced myself. To realize that my mind is just like my hand. And that I am not my mind. And it's much like my computer at home. It's got some software. And it silently runs all the time. And that does not mean I need to pay much attention to it. Matter of fact, a lot of the data that goes through, it's ridiculous to even print it out. That was a very powerful moment for me. Because as long as I was identified with my mind, I could not be present with you. Then I'm either attached to my story, my past, or I'm concerned about the future, which is all about fear. That's how I live most of my life. So I sit in the morning. I like the timer because it imposes discipline. Discipline is the horse I ride. Why do you think this book says this? I love to go to monasteries. Those of you who have ever gone to a monastery will notice they will do everything in a set time. And the reason that they do that is the men who initially started monasteries realized that these men, primarily they were men and women who loved God, wanted to serve God without discipline, failed miserably within the monastery, so they begin to set up certain times to do certain things. And so I model my life after that. Monday through Friday, I get up at 4:30 a.m. and I spend an hour in prayer and meditation. And I do it like clockwork. Again, you go to the ocean with a thimble. See, I had to reach a place in my program, in my spiritual life, where I had to quit talking and telling you how important God was, and I had to begin demonstrating how important God was by giving God time. I love to trap people sometimes. I'll say, well, what's the most important relationship in your life? And they'll say, oh, with God. I say, really? How much time did you give God today? Well, I got to go, Mark. See, if you want to know what is the most important relationship in your life, look at how much time you devote to it. But don't kid yourself. If you're giving God 5 minutes in the morning, you know, again, you go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of water. I'm ill-equipped to live in the world, and my experience is I either got to have a lot of booze or a lot of God. I can't do that in 5 minutes. I don't do the things I do at 10 and 11 because I want to be a neat guy and liked. I do it because I'm ill-equipped to deal in the world, and I mean that. 14, 15 years sober one day, sitting outside a grocery store, paralyzed with fear to even walk in to buy food. See, I touched how ill-equipped I am and how deeply I need to have that conscious contact. I can't do it in 5 minutes. That's why I believe the Big Book has all these incredible pages and things for us to do in 10 and 11. Because I've never met an alky that isn't the same way. You are ill-equipped to deal in the world, too. That's all I got for now.
Peter, recovered alcoholic. Mark was talking about, attending a lot of workshops and getting all these sponsors and reading all these books. We can attend workshop after workshop after workshop and feel real good for a few days and don't do anything else. And then we bottom out and look for the next workshop, next spiritual retreat. And we get all jacked up and we come back to home group. I've just been to a tremendous workshop. It's really good. I feel God. And 3 days later, I need a new sponsor. I'm bottoming out again. And I you know, work with like a truckload of books, put them on the shelf. So the prospects, when they come over, say, wow, you're a guru. Look at all the books you read. And I just did collecting dust. But when I'm buying it, I'm feeling real spiritual for a moment. Going to Barnes and Nobles, look at the spiritual books I'm buying. I'm somebody. And my whole self-worth, all I be, is wrapped up in a book. Or how you think about me, your perceptions of me. And what I'm really doing is seeking happiness in an external condition. In a retreat, in a book, in the approval of others. And what my book, what my 11th step has allowed me to do with an experience with God is little by slowly have that stuff dissolve. And I learned from reading some of these books and sitting with the sponsor and having experiences with God after bottoming out in certain areas of my life, that I was a seeker, not of experience, but I was a seeker of happiness. Whatever that looked like to make me feel happy. Wanted to feel happy with her, wanted to feel happy with the new car. I got a new car, I feel so happy right now, and then I get the first car payment, and I'm not so happy anymore. You know, read a new book, I feel happy, and I bottom out with the book, not so happy. And then what I found out was there's a difference between seeking happiness and experiencing internal peace, which is what Mark just finished talking about. Moving from moment to moment to moment, with not trying to interpret everything that goes on, not trying to judge everything that goes on, but being present. Not dependent upon external things to make me feel okay and give me this false sense of self, but being integrated with this power, having an experience with this power, and moving through all my affairs. And I may feel joy when I see a baby being born. I may feel sadness when I lose a loved one. But I'm in a place of acceptance of what is, and I move. Big difference. One is bondage of self, and one is being integrated with this power called God and getting free and being free. And it's not it doesn't have to be a short-lived thing. Like, you'll hear people, I'm feeling really good. I've been doing this work. Things are okay. I'm waiting for the shoe to drop, and God doesn't make too hard terms. What am I doing to suit up and show up and continue to seek this power and grow in understanding and effectiveness? How free do we want to be? We may be here this morning feeling free, but we can get freer. Are you telling me that this is it? Isn't God greater than that? And all I can do is talk with a gentleman earlier about, you know, we try to share our experiences with this power of God, but the words are an injustice to the experience in God because they fall short. And the best thing I could offer you, is have an experience with God yourself. And then your words will fall short, but the experience will be incredible to pass on to others. Our book talks about how we want to comprehend and define that power of God. And I thought there was a part of this journey early on that I thought, if I can comprehend and define my God, I must be doing something right. And I set out to comprehend and define this power of God. And what I did, there was a quick shift into putting God in a box by comprehending and defining my God. I knew my God. He's capable of doing this. Which meant I'm coming at God again with my thinking mind, which meant that God isn't capable of doing many other things. And I'm wondering why I'm experiencing fear in certain areas of my life. A great exercise my sponsor had me do was write down where I believe God's working in my life. While I'm clean and sober. Haven't gotten arrested. Then I had to write down where I believe God's not working in my life. And ego got in the middle of that and said, we don't put that down because we're the prize pupil. But I got still without judgments to that, and I saw where I didn't believe God was working in my life. And that was the current agnosticism. I experienced this God by not knowing this power. You with me? Once I think I know this power, I do what I did, comprehend and define, and my God got real small in a hurry. This power just is. And it isn't only in an AA meeting, or in a monastery, or my house of worship. It's in the back of a hallway where some drunk is dying right now with a bottle. It's in a treatment center. It's at work. Is that my time? Might they cut me out of here already? That was it? My practice has evolved. My prayer meditation has evolved. The first time I sat to work with meditation, there was a woman who wasn't a member of AA but had been working with this for a long time and knew about my interest and helped me. And she put me on a timer. She put me on a 2-minute timer. And the very first time I meditated, 2 minutes felt like I was in there for 25 years. And I was attached to, you know, the thinking mind's running wild. I'm trying to get still, and I need to do this, and I need to be there, and I need to do this, and what about before, and if only that would have happened. And later on, it was all over the place. And I was taught, when those thoughts come, go with them and come back, not to get attached to them. Pay attention to breath. I heard a gentleman gave a great analogy. He talked about the sky and the clouds, how we are the sky, which is present, never moves, and the clouds just come, and they go. The sky doesn't move, but the clouds just come, they go. 2 minutes became 5 minutes, and the timer went to 8 minutes, and somewhere in there was no timer, and I was meditating, little by slowly. And there's a time I'm up in the morning, I'm an early riser, I'm up in the morning, something was brought to me early on, brought to me. I woke up one day, literally opening my eyes, and was overwhelmed with gratitude that I'm alive, I'm sober, I'm not in some jail cell in the back of a hallway. I was overwhelmed with the spirit of gratitude, and I gave thanks before I actually sat. And that has just stayed with me. As my eyes open, I thank God for another day, lying in bed. And then I go give time of worship. And I've been shown how to set up a little altar in my home. And it's my private place, and that's where I go to each day. And I've worked with lots of inspirational books over the years. And we have like these daily meditation books, meditation for men, meditation for women, meditation if you're from Brooklyn, New York. The book is blank, by the way. There's nothing in it. You know, all these meditation books. And what I got into doing was I had a stack of books in the morning that I had to read a page of everything, all these little pamphlets. And I would walk away and say, oh no, I forgot this book, I have to read a page. Oh wait, I got to read a page. I was becoming neurotic, trying to get still and worship God, and I was worshiping the books. And where I am currently is I read when I'm moved to read, and I don't when I'm not. But I always give prayer and meditation. And I've worked with many things. After I leave that place of meditation and I head out the door in the morning, can I take that with me, or do I leave it? I was spiritual for a half hour and I'm out the door and I go. And I get in the car and here comes the internal dialogue. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, we're off to work, we're off doing our chores, we just left our place of meditation, right? And we're in the car going to wherever we're going, say we're on our way to work, and we've character assassinated everyone in the place. As soon as that person calls, I'm going to give them a piece of my mind. And when my boss doesn't give me a raise today, boy, am I going to get him. And then we're back home, and if she doesn't have dinner ready, when I get home from work at 7 o'clock in the morning, we have the internal dialogue. We have this wrestling match going on in our head. We just got into the car. I read somewhere where a student went to his teacher, and he says, how do you know when you're awake? And he says, by the amount of internal dialogue I have going on. That's how I know when I'm attached to my mind, when the dialogue is going again. My sponsor asked me a question one time. How are you alone sitting on your couch when no one's around? What's that look like for you? Character assassinating the entire planet, and then we'll walk into an AA meeting and say, hello, how are you? I'm spiritual. On the way to meeting, cut off about 30 people on the road because they were in our way, and we get there and we speak on step 11 about worshiping God and not judging others. It has evolved this practice for me. A handful of years ago, I got moved to work with this religious practice along with prayer and meditation. And unless I'm doing something like this where I get to do this practice early in the morning, I'll do it every afternoon at just about the same time. And this came to me, and I just started working with this, and I had tremendous experiences with this religious practice. What I have found out is When we enter the world of the spirit, we go from a place of things that we know about, and we develop this vital sixth sense that we don't know much about because it's the power of God, and we experience it. And so when things come to me, I stop questioning it. Because my thinking mind wants God on a spreadsheet. My thinking mind wants God. 2 and 2 equals 4. I can understand that. Okay, let's move. And God ain't like that. And so when things come to me, I don't question it. Same thing when I'm working with a book. You know, we're reading a book and a page stops us. Why is that page talking to me? I pay attention to that. And so I got moved to work with this practice. And I got some help with it. And I had experiences with this practice leading into another meditation that completely transformed my life. In the discipline of this work that we get to do, there's a tremendous amount of freedom. And the narrowing of this road, as we enter the world of the Spirit, for me, in a sense, the discipline has narrowed the road. It has really opened up the world to me. Where I can speak freely of my inventory to others, including the guys I sponsor, and not in this place where I'm the sponsor and they're not, so I can't reveal. And I can reveal to my sponsor about my inventory with fears, with me trying to control everything around me. And I see quickly how attached I am to my thinking mind and how fear is the catalyst all the time. Fear is the catalyst all the time. It sets me up for failure. It sets me up to trying to control everything, which means I've moved away from this power in a sense, and I'm running the show again. The neat thing about fear, because it's really cunning, baffling, and powerful, it gets me to feel physically sick with it. And my emotions feed thinking, thinking feeds emotions, and I'm wondering why I feel like the entire planet is crumbling down around me. And I get physically sick from it. I actually go through this pain where I'm not useful to anyone because of what fear can do. What do I get to do? Turn back to this power. Here's a question that was given to me having to do with fear. I was told, Peter, get still for a minute. Are you in any immediate danger right now? I said, no. So isn't the fear coming from a thinking mind? It isn't real, is it? It feels real, but it isn't. So turn back to this power. Turn in order to go out. And not worship the mechanics, not worship the methodology. Go into silence to hear. How do we meditate? By going silent. How do I go silent? By meditating. How do I meditate? By going silent. How do I go silent? By meditating. And I get to practice. A friend of mine was meditating. And I learned from him about giving worship to what I think is God, and all I am is self-absorbed again, consumed with me. But I think I'm worshiping this power. A friend of mine was sitting in a meditation, and as he's sitting there, he tells me the story. He hears his wife calling him from another room. She needed help with something. And she called him the first time, and she called him the second time, and around a third time, he said to her, God damn it, don't you know I'm meditating? And he realized how self-absorbed he was, that he really wasn't having any kind of spiritual life, but he was just consumed with himself again. I go to meditate and it's 5 o'clock in the morning and the house burns down. I don't finish meditation because I have to run out the door. God will understand that. You know? If I go into practice and my children or my wife needs help with something, assistance, I can go help them. I can go be of service. God will understand. It's about doing this to be of service to everyone around me. And then giving it away, all I've experienced, giving it away in abundance to those who care to have it. Share the entire load. Give it all away. Because God will replenish me. We feel we get the flow of His Spirit into us and then out to you. God to me and then out to you as you do the same. And we create this fellowship. We commence shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey. And we share our experiences with each other and the newcomer. God's Spirit flows into me and out to you. Can we talk about that from a place of experience? Or is that just language of knowledge? Just some words. Claiming God with my lips, but in a place of experience I have none. Many times we get to do things like this and someone will say, ask a question, Pete, based on your opinion, what do you think of this? And I don't have an answer. I'll give you an experience, but I'm not going to give you my opinion. That's all I can share, is my experiences that God has given me up until this point. And I'll turn it over to Mark. I will say this. There's a tremendous amount of information out there that I work with along with my big book. And I've been quick to see where religious people are right, and I've made use of what they offer, especially right after 9/11. That's who I sought out to get peace in this. But I will tell you, and I don't claim this with my lips, I come at you from my heart with this. My greatest spiritual teachers have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous. People like me, who had no power, choice, or control over the first drink, could not stop drinking, experience incomprehensible demoralization, wake up in here. They have been my greatest spiritual teachers. That's why I call this place sacred, because it is.
Just two things in spiritual experience that makes this statement. Says, with few exceptions, our members find they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own concept of a power greater than themselves. My experience is the work in 1 through 9 introduced me to an inner resource. And what 10-11 do is allow me to maintain this awareness of a power greater than myself, which becomes the essence of my spiritual experience, and take that out into the world. Regardless of my external life, which is constantly changing because I live in a world of impermanence. The reason for the work in 10 and 11 is so that this inner resource, I can stay connected to it. Because what I know, if you live long enough, and some of you are like me, you have a little gray, everything you dearly love will be gone. Everything. How do we get through that? My experience is we stay tapped into the inner resource. That's what fit spiritual condition is, regardless of my external world. That's all I got. Thank you. God bless you.